Know your church fathers. Theophilus of Antioch lived a pagan lifestyle until he was converted by reading the scriptures. His most notable work, Apology, was written to an unbelieving friend to show that the scriptures were self-authenticating and argued that the antiquity, clarity, and consistency of the scriptures prove their divine origin. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's Witness Wednesday on Wretched Radio here at Georgia Tech on a gorgeous day. I got to talk to this guy. Hold on. Hey, young man. I gotta ask you a question on the radio. You know what it is, don't you?
The radio?
Yeah. Why do you have your hair dyed blue?
I actually was trying to go to white hair, and I screwed it up, so I decided to go over it with blue.
Oh, okay. So the white didn't become blue. You did it on purpose after the white.
Yeah.
Why? Okay, so why the... It's pretty provocative hairstyle. Pretty provocative color. How come?
I don't know. Like, I like being noticed, I guess.
You like the attention.
Yeah,
that's honest.
Yeah,
good for you.
And you know, it's a way to express yourself. I guess.
What are you expressing? What are you saying to the world with your royal blue hair color?
I guess
is that royal blue? Kinda.
I guess so.
Yeah, right.
I guess I'm saying old lady blue.
That's like royal blue.
No, it's not. Yeah, it's. I was actually very surprised with how deep it came out. I guess I'm sort of saying. You know, I'll do my own thing, right? And
you're a nonconformist.
I wouldn't say that. I mean, I conform to things that I think are worth conforming to, but you know, things I don't.
Do you think that you have to conform to anything that you don't agree with? Like the laws of the land.
I don't think if you. I won't conform to laws I don't think are just. I will conform to laws I think are there to help people.
So you're willing to break the law?
Yeah.
Really? Do you think that it would be fair for the justice system to punish you for breaking the laws, even though you disagree with them?
Depends on the law. In general, most laws I am willing to follow. There are some laws I am not, and I don't think it's fair to be punished for that. I don't think it's fair to punish other people for that.
I want to ask you about a different set of laws.
Mm-hmm.
Do you think that you have to follow God's laws?
I am not a believer of God's laws. I don't think that that a supreme being made a set of laws, so...
How's about the Ten Commandments?
I think the Ten Commandments are a good... They're a good set of morals, and I think... You should follow them, not as laws, but definitely as guidelines at the very least.
Okay. So do you think if God wrote those laws
mm-hmm.
and he requires you to keep them, you know, the lying, the stealing, the lusting, the blasphemy,
mm-hmm.
do you think that it's fair for God to punish people who break his laws?
No, I don't.
Why not?
Because God, if the biblical God is true, He created people with their own flaws, and to punish people for flaws that he created himself, I think is not consistent with the image of a benevolent creator.
Let me try to reason with you for a second. See if this analogy works. Let me know. If not, that's okay. Your parents gave birth to you, right?
Yes.
Are they responsible for your bad behavior?
In a way, they are because they raised me,
okay,
but they are not directly responsible.
You're a man now. You're an adult, so you are no longer under the authority of your parents.
Right.
If you committed a crime today, you're over 18, correct?
Mm.
You committed a crime. There's no way you could say to the judge, Judge, my parents are responsible. They created me.
Yeah. The problem with that is that I understand exactly where you're going, but it's a straw man argument because... My parents did not design me. They did create me, but not anywhere near in the same sense as the biblical God created people, because he created them because he is all powerful and he's omniscient. He can know exactly what he is doing, exactly how events will happen when he creates someone.
Good for you. Okay, let me try this one on you. See what you're thinking, guy. All right, I'm gonna suggest that God made people not sinful. But he made people perfect.
Mm-hmm.
Adam and Eve. Okay?
Right.
You know that story.
Yes.
And he let them have a free will so that they could choose whether to follow him or to sin. Mm-hmm. And they willfully sinned, and therefore the whole world fell into sin. And everybody that's born is born into sin thanks to Adam, not thanks to God.
Okay.
Is that fair?
No, because the story of Adam and Eve implies that Adam and Eve did something wrong.
They did.
But they didn't.
They disobeyed.
They disobeyed, but they had no reason to know why they should obey God. And they had no concept of why what they were doing was evil, besides that it was arbitrarily decided to be evil by God. And in fact, they had no knowledge of good and evil, so the concept of doing something evil had absolutely no meaning to either of them.
Sure, but God commanded them, don't do that, or you will die. So they knew exactly what the consequences were.
He created ignorant beings in Adam and Eve.
No,
and
they knew the rules. When he explained the rules,
but they had no concept of why those rules were in place.
Or you'll die.
Exactly.
Now, let me share this with you and see if this makes the Adam and Eve story more reasonable.
Okay.
I think God knew that they would break the rules. Mm-hmm. He knew it. And there was a plan and there was a purpose for it. Because I would suggest to you that God has two sets of attributes, two categories of attributes. For instance, he has power and he has truth. And he can demonstrate those things to himself because he's a Father, Son, and Holy Spirit.
Right.
He doesn't need anybody to show those attributes to. But he's also got mercy and grace and loving kindness. And he can't show that to himself because he doesn't need it because he's perfect. So he created a world, put two people, Adam and Eve, on this earth, knowing that they'd sin so that he could show them mercy, grace, and loving kindness.
But he doesn't show
and
them.
Forgive them.
He doesn't show. Well, if he truly forgave them, why does he? I mean, he's an all-powerful figure. He could instantaneously, if he's truly all-powerful, he could instantaneously make us all perfect beings once again.
Okay.
But he doesn't because he's not. The biblical God isn't merciful.
No, because if he did that, then it wouldn't be from your heart. It would be coercion. Let me keep going with the story, okay?
Okay.
The plan to rescue you so that he could show mercy. There's a little bit of tension going on.
Right.
Here's the situation. Let's focus on you for a second.
Mm-hmm.
Let's see if you've got a problem with God, if you deserve the wrath of God. We're going to set up a little courtroom scene here to see if we can resolve the tension and if this makes sense to you. How many lies do you think you've told in your life?
Probably an uncountable number.
Okay. How many things do you think you've stolen?
Far fewer things than I've lied about, but I have no doubt.
It only takes one thing and you're a thief, right?
Yeah.
Okay. How many times have you lusted in your brain, had fantasy thoughts?
Plenty of times,
okay, because Jesus warned you don't have to commit the act with your body. Just think about it, and he sees what's going on inside of your brain.
Mm-hmm.
How many times have you taken God's name in vain? Instead of praising him or thanking him, you just tossed it out casually or used it as a four-letter filth word.
Plenty of times.
So you've broken that law, too.
Mm-hmm.
So here you are in the courtroom of God's justice. The books are open on your life, and he knows everything you've ever done, every deed in darkness, every sinful thought, everything that you failed to do that you should have done, thanking him, praising him, helping people.
Right.
You're guilty. He knows it all.
Mm-hmm.
God should give you justice, and he should give you what you deserve. And your conscience tells you he's right to punish me for lying and stealing.
No, he's not.
Lying, you know that lying is wrong, and stealing is wrong.
Lying is not wrong in stealing. Stealing, I would say, is
taking his
wrong.
Name in vain and
taking
lusting.
Taking his vain in name isn't wrong at all. Lusting is not wrong at all, as long as it doesn't hurt people. But
dude,
you can hurt people.
I don't know who
it.
Your mother is, but I would never use her name in a bad way. You know that it's wrong to not use God's name in a high way. You can imagine how offended he would be.
But he created those things that have our capacity to make those offenses. He sovereignly
allowed it, but he doesn't cause you to sin. You're responsible for yours, I'm responsible for mine. Let me finish the little analogy here, just so you can see the whole big picture, and you can figure out what you're going to do with it.
Mm-hmm.
All right? You're guilty, you deserve God's wrath, but God is good. And remember, he wants to show his mercy, grace, and loving kindness.
Right.
But he can't just let you go free. A judge who lets a guilty criminal go is not a just judge. God is the just judge of all
the
world.
Depends what the crime is.
And he wants to let you go because he's good and he loves you despite your rebellion. Mm-hmm. But he can't just set you free because that wouldn't be fair to others and it would be a violation of truth. And he is truth and he can't break his own laws. So God, before history began, came up with the plan. I know that Adam and Eve will sin. I know that the man with the royal blue hair is going to sin. And I know that they've got a debt against me, but I'm going to send somebody who can pay their debt. I'll send my son, Jesus Christ, to be brutally beaten, to die on a cross, to take the punishment, to pay the fine that you owe to
God. But that doesn't make any sense.
Oh, it makes sense.
No, it doesn't.
You might reject it, but it makes perfect
sense.
No,
he'd have no... That's such a just... It's an empty, a completely empty gesture. He's all powerful. He doesn't need to send someone to be beaten and killed.
Because he's just.
No, he could do it himself. He could snap of his fingers, do whatever he want because he's all powerful.
Let's imagine a guy's in a courtroom and he's raped a bunch of children.
Mm-hmm.
And the judge goes, "I'm so powerful, I'm just going to let you go." You're going to go, "Wait a second, where's justice? Get him, get the bad guy." Something inside of you says justice must be served.
But that's completely different from the judge saying, "Here, I'm going to cut off my own hand, and so you don't have to go to jail." That's what your analogy is saying.
Okay, I'll live with that.
But that would be an even worse perversion of justice.
Okay, all right. You're being very kind and very polite with me, and you're a thoughtful guy. Let me take a break,
okay, and
we'll finish this up, and I'll share something with you that hopefully will convince you that God cutting off his hand, if you will, is the most amazing thing that's ever happened for you. Fair enough?
Okay.
Sit tight. 1 second. We're taking a break. Wretched Radio.
Your son asked to use your cell phone yesterday, and for just a split second, your heart stopped. And it wasn't because of what you thought he might find. You're careful about that, but because of what you knew he wouldn't find. Evidence of a man actually living for Christ. See, our kids don't care about our Sunday morning Christianity. They watch us when we think no one's looking. They notice when Dad disappears into his office and locks the door. What if your son could actually see a father who's genuinely free? A dad whose private life matches up with his public faith. That's not a fantasy, it's an actual reality because men experience that transformation every day when they stop trying to manage their sin and let Christ kill it instead. Todd Friel's Play the Man shows you exactly how that works. There's no gimmicks, there's no quick fixes. It's just full of biblical truth about how God transforms men. Play the Man by Todd Friel. It's available right now as an audiobook, an ebook, and video series only at fortisplus.org. Hey, look, some battles, they're just too important to lose. Let me ask you a question. When was the last time you actually felt something? Without fear, without shame, without immediately wanting to numb it? If you're living on autopilot, you're not alone. Millions are told the same thing. It's just a chemical imbalance. Hey, take this, you'll be fine. But you're not fine. You're numb. Here's the truth the world doesn't tell you. Your emotions, they're not the enemy. But they also shouldn't be your master either. Dr. Greg Gifford gets that, and his new series, Life Without the Numb, is available right now at fortisplus.org. It's a free 10-week series that shows how God's Word speaks into anxiety, depression, and emotional chaos, and it does so with clarity you've never heard before. New episodes every Monday, absolutely free at fortisplus.org. This isn't about ignoring struggles. It's about transformation from the inside out. Life Without the Numb. Watch at fortisplus.org. Stop surviving and start living. Thanks for listening to Wretched Radio today. At Fortis Institute, we've assembled an incredible team of biblical voices who are equipping believers every day. Dr. John Krotz, Dr. Adam Tyson, Dr. Greg Gifford, Libby Glosson, Pastor Brad Bigney, Dr. Andrew Walker, Jason Lyle, Tim Challies, and of course, our very own Todd Friel. And their work has been invaluable in equipping believers because that's our mission. And the beautiful part, when you join us and link arms with us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner, your faithful giving doesn't just sit there. It multiplies into campus evangelism and biblical counseling, marriage restoration, and gospel proclamation across the globe. And speaking of equipping people, make sure you download Fortis Plus. It is completely free if you haven't downloaded it yet, and it is loaded with hundreds of hours of content, with new content added every single day. No cost, no catch, just solid biblical truth. Look, the fields are white for harvest, and your monthly partnership make it possible. Join us as an ongoing monthly gospel partner right now by visiting fortisinstitute.org. Wretched. Amazing grace, amazing gospel.
Attributes of God. Can a loving God be wrathful? If God loves righteousness, loves people, and wants what is best for his creation, he must hate what runs contrary to his will. God must always respond to sin with wrath, and his wrath must be satisfied. It is either satisfied on the cross, or each person will bear God's wrath eternally in hell. This is Wretched Radio with Todd Friel.
It's Wretched Radio. We are here at Georgia Tech. Scott, here's the story. All right. Okay. I want to try to share with you, a comparable analogy to what God has done for you by sending his son to take the wrath that you deserve so that your court case can be dismissed.
Okay.
Imagine there's an island, mm-hmm. and there's a tribal ruler, the king.
Okay.
And the king has laws, and they're rules, and they're good rules because it protects everybody and it makes the village run right. And he's kind, and he's benevolent, and he upholds justice. And one of his rules is nobody can steal from the food storage bin.
Okay.
Because if that happens, people starve.
Right.
And the punishment for taking food from the bin is death.
Okay.
One day, it's discovered that somebody's been taking food from the storage bin. And people go searching to find out who the criminal is, and they can't find him. And even more food is taken away from the bin. And now the king is rightly furious, somebody who would rebel against his laws that are good for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Finally, the announcement comes. They found the criminal who's been stealing from the storage bins. The tribe gathers together in the town center. The king is still in his hut. They've got the criminal tied up at the stake in the middle of the center with people surrounding him because he is going to be lashed unto death because that is the law.
Mm-hmm.
Guess who the criminal is?
Probably someone related to the chief.
You
or
got
something.
It. Good for you. It's the tribal leader's son. He walks out, and everybody gasps when they see that it's the tribal leader's son. What will the tribal leader do? Will he turn his back to justice and let his son go because he loves him? Or because he loves justice more, will he punish his own son? Do you see the tension going on here?
Yeah.
Here's what God did. It goes just like this story. The tribal leader sees his son and it breaks his heart, but he announces, strip the boy. The young man is chained up with his bare back to the person who's going to administer the lashes unto death. And as the whip is drawn back, the tribal leader says, stop. And everybody gasps and they think, oh no, he's going to turn his back on justice. The tribal leader takes off his own robe, exposing his bare back, walks up to the son, wraps his arm around the son, exposing his back to the whip, and he says, proceed. And he takes the lashes for his beloved child. Justice is satisfied, and the son is saved. That's what God did for you, Scott. He sent his son to take the punishment that you deserve. He took the lashes you deserve. He hung on the cross, getting the wrath of the Father poured out on himself so that you could be set free, so justice could be satisfied, and God could rescue you. That's goodness, Scott. That's kindness. You're a guilty criminal, just like me and everybody else on this campus. God must punish us for our thoughts and our deeds and our words and our intentions and our actions and our failures. But he wants to save us because he's kind and merciful.
Right.
And he sent his son to satisfy justice. And not only that, because Jesus kept all the laws that you and I broke. Not only do we have our sins forgiven because Jesus took the wrath of the Father, but the goodness that Jesus credited by keeping all the commandments that you and I have broken can be credited to our account too, so we can be seen as righteous before God.
So you say that he had a just law, but I don't think that killing someone for stealing food is an appropriate punishment at all, and I don't think eternal damnation is appropriate punishment for lying or lusting.
Did you see the story recently? The judge, who was very gentle in his sentencing, of a man who strangled 8 women to death. And they interviewed the guy who strangled 8 women to death, and he talked about how much he enjoyed it because it was such a connection with the person.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this guy's whacked. And
right.
then he said, but you know what? I'm not a bad person. I only strangled 8 women. Other serial killers have murdered, like, dozens of people. See, he doesn't think he's so bad. But he's not the standard. The standard is God, not you and me. God is the standard.
But why should the person who shoplifts from Kmart also be put to that same final justice?
Okay, very fair question. All right. Point number one, we see ourselves in a confused state. Our view of ourselves isn't good because we like us. So we, just like the serial killer, judge ourselves to be good.
Mm-hmm.
We need an objective standard. Now that brings us to the second point, in answer to your last question. Why would shoplifting be worthy of eternal hell? Here's why. If I told a lie to my son, do you know what's going to happen to me? Absolutely nothing, because he has no power over me. He has no authority.
Right.
If I lie to my wife, chances are very good I'm sleeping on the couch that night. Okay?
Right.
If I lie to my employer, I'm getting fired.
Right.
If I lie to the government, it's called treason, and I'm going to jail.
Okay.
Now, I've committed the same crime, the same act, 4 times, but I've also received 4 different punishments. What changed in the scenario for me to receive a greater punishment?
The capacity of the person you wronged to punish you?
The one against whom I committed the crime, all right?
But
you think that shoplifting or lusting is no big deal, but the one against whom you've committed the crime is God, and he's way up there. And your offense is exceedingly sinful because he's exceedingly holy.
But that's why you're worthy of hell. But he created us to lust after people.
No.
And He didn't create you to do it.
He created you knowing that you would do it, but he didn't cause you to do it or make you do it. You've done it all by yourself.
No. If you are an all-powerful figure and you create people with the powerful instinct to do that and the lack of self-control and the lack of a reason
God doesn't make you sin. No, God doesn't make you sin.
But he does. Because he knows exactly how he created us. If you program a robot and it has
But you're not a robot. We
are basically mechanical robots.
No, you're not. You've got a will, right? Don't you have choices?
Based on the configuration of my brain.
For about 20 minutes to not punch me in the face, and I'm thinking you might like to. But you haven't done that.
No, you've chosen to restrain yourself. I don't want to punch you in the face at all.
In fact, you've been
like definitely the most pleasant interaction I've had with someone.
Right there. Like a flying ant.
Thank you. Okay. If someone created a robot and it had an algorithm based on its surroundings to either kill people or not to kill people. And it wouldn't always kill people. But sometimes it would kill people. The person who made it could argue, oh, I didn't make it kill people. But he should still be responsible for that robot killing people, just as God should be responsible for, if he created us and he is all-powerful and all-knowing, he should be responsible for every sin we commit.
You're saying that God is responsible for all the atrocities on this earth? God is causing them? And you aren't making free decisions? You're really not making decisions?
I'm making... free will is so impossible to define that there's no point arguing
about it.
But
going back to your analogy, if indeed we are robots,
right,
then why wouldn't a good God make you behave perfectly?
I don't know, because... Yeah, he is!
Wow, that's an accusation.
The Abrahamic God is one of the, like, most unpleasant... He's evil. He is. Like, you read the Old Testament...
You've been reading Richard Dawkins.
I read a lot of things from both sides of the issue, and I end up agreeing with Dawkins on some of the things he says.
Give me the best thing that you think makes God evil.
The genocides he commits, the atrocities he commands.
Okay, we'll put them all underneath. He killed people.
He killed lots of people.
Okay, so let me...
Innocent people.
Okay, so imagine if every person born is a sinner, a rebel against God.
Uh-huh.
Does God not have the right to execute everybody on the spot?
No. Do parents have a right to kill their children?
Nope, because they're human beings. He's God.
So
every sin is committed against him. See, the question isn't why does God kill people? The question really should be, Scott, why does he let anybody live? Really, if you think about your sinful thoughts alone,
he should squash you like a bug right now. If he is really so offended by all the things we do, he should wipe all of us out and make perfect people, but he doesn't.
No, instead, he does it. This is his plan, to demonstrate his mercy, grace, and loving kindness.
Why does he need to demonstrate it to some people who are so far below him? There's no reason for him to.
Sure, so that he can be glorified.
He's all powerful. He already knows his glory. You're assuming human characteristics of something who is so far beyond human.
In a sense, but they transfer the other way. But having said that, God is the one who should get all the attention because he's the best thing there is.
Right.
Fundamentally, as we depart, here's the difference between you and me. All right. And you might disagree with this, but this is what I think.
Mm-hmm.
You think that people are basically good. I think people are basically bad. You think that God owes them life.
I think people are basically human.
Yeah. But I think that God owes us death. If God gave us what we deserve, we'd be in big trouble.
I don't think God owes us anything. I don't think he... Because I don't believe in God. I don't owe God anything because I don't believe in him.
That's irrelevant, though. He gave you life and breath.
He's given you your hair. But I don't think he did, is the problem.
I beg to differ, but we'll leave it at that. How's that? Fair enough?
Okay.
We part as friends?
Yes.
All right, dude.
Okay.
Thanks for the chat. You know, I'm guessing. I'm just guessing. Scott maybe sounds a little goofy to you. It's not out of the mainstream of thinking. So that is why I spend so much time with him, because he's not a whacked out guy. He's just educated wrongly. And his system is completely flipped upside down, and it is informed by people like Richard Dawkins, the university system, the government schools, and MTV. So that's why I spend so much time with him. But I have to tell you, I'm a little bit concerned about me. He just said, I'm the most pleasant Christian that he's ever had an interaction with. Where have I gone wrong? Was I too nice? Should he have been angry at me when it was all done? I'm happy to take the lumps on that. But you should evaluate how you hear me doing it. Use me as the guinea pig, not as the standard of how to do it or how not to do it. I'm just trying the best that I can. You judge it and determine if that is something that you should emulate or change to do it better. Okie dokie. And until tomorrow, go serve your king.